Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sankofa Radio, where we travel through the past before stopping here at the present on our journey into the future. I'm your host, Sunday Otto Rayvon, with my co-host and main man, Oscar Adonso. Today's show, we will talk about Martin Luther King, his life, philosophy, and the activist strategies that he used, and how would they be prevalent today. My brother Scar, he with me. For all political activists out here still fighting, still on the struggle for freedom, justice, and equality, there's a lot of things we can learn from Dr. Martin Luther King and the strategies that he used. Mainly goes to the plight of economics. It goes to the unification of a people. It goes to having one common goal and unifying on that common goal to reach the means and vision that we desire. As we get into it, we'll discuss what his philosophy means for us today, how his philosophy changed society, how his philosophy impacted society, and how have people used or manipulated his philosophy for their own benefit and for their own agendas and personal interests. Dr. Martin Luther King was a deep man. He was a loving man. He had great intentions. He had great visions. We noticed through his philosophy of love. And love is that unifying principle that rises above all personal ego and individualistic motivations. You know, and when you're moving on the power of love, yeah, you're able to see things that the commoner can't see. There have been great debates about Dr. King's philosophy versus Malcolm X's philosophy dealing with the nonviolent movement. And Dr. Martin Luther King's strategy of utilizing white America as a mirror to reflect their own negative hatred and violence against them, to strike a moral conscience in them, tone their harshness in order to achieve the true vision of unity and integration. Peace, Brother Scarlett.
Peace to you, Sunday Otto, man. Sorry I was late, man. How you doing this morning, bro?
I'm doing great, my brother. We're just building about the philosophy, you know, is it relevant today as far as the activist strategies, Dr. Martin Luther King, and how there are certain particular groups who may want to use this philosophy for their own interests or manipulate it for their own personal gain. And so I was just skimming over that. But introduce yourself, brother.
I was saying, if you don't mind, man, I would like to give a dedication, if you don't mind. Is that peace?
That's peace.
Yeah, so, to start the show off, man, today, I would like to give a dedication to the countless men and women who sacrificed throughout the civil rights struggle, beginning in 1865, when our struggle for citizenship rights actually began and ended slavery, all the way up until today, man. The civil rights struggle ain't over. You know what I'm saying? Police killings in the streets. Poor schools, slum communities, mass incarceration, the list goes on and on and on. The civil rights struggle ain't over. And I just want to give a shout out to all the people, you know what I'm saying? The unnoticed, the unseen, the unsung heroes. The civil rights struggle wasn't one or two men, it wasn't one or two organizations, it was a myriad of people, man, you know what I'm saying, who lost their lives, who sacrificed so that we can enjoy things. And King is just one of those people who just happened to be highlighted. I guess I'll start to join off the day, man. Do you mind if I put King in context a little bit, man, from my perspective? And I'm going to take about 2 minutes. I ain't going to get too long.
By all means, brother. That's right.
Thanks. All right, so what I want to say is, first of all, Martin Luther King, man, is a hero. You know, and it's not to be taken for granted that we have a day in America that we can recognize this brother, because that ain't come for the younger generation without a struggle in and of itself. But to really truly understand King, you got to understand that this brother wasn't, like, he wasn't, he didn't train himself to be an activist. He was kind of thrust into it. In Montgomery in 1955, when Rosa Parks refused to give her seat up, Martin Luther King happened to be a minister in Montgomery at the time. And so when he refused to give her seat up, they boycotted in protest that they have a trial. But after she was found guilty, they ended up boycotting indefinitely. And Martin Luther King, Ralph Abernathy, other local leaders was called to help promote the boycott. And it was during this year-long struggle that Martin Luther King became recognized nationally. But, you know, Martin Luther King, he wasn't looking for that. He wasn't even really wanting to be thrust into the forefront. It was like he was being called out by the
chosen.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He chose it. You dig what I'm saying? And so that's exactly how he became a national figure. And then, of course, he went on to do more speaking engagements, more activism. And there's a lot of things we'll tackle later on. But King becomes a holiday after his death only because his wife, primarily his wife, his Queen Coretta, after a 15-year fight, along with other activists, really, really pushed Stevie Wonder, really, really pushed. And there was a lot of pushback. A lot of people tried to say, you know, he was a sexual deviant, so he shouldn't be recognized with the forefathers. They were saying things like he was an optimist. They were saying things like he was a fraud. And we take for granted that King was this beloved figure that he is today. In the last year of his life, he was the most hated man in America. You know, he was the George Zimmerman of his time. You know what I'm saying? To understand the complexities of this man, the struggle to be recognized here in Virginia, in protest of Martin Luther King, they put his holiday on the same day as Lee Jackson. It's not until 2000 that was changed. You know what I'm saying? So my question, straight up, is what are your feelings about Dr. King, dog? You know what I mean? Just, you know, what do you think about the brother?
I think the brother was a very great man. Just like you say, the brother was a hero. You know, I was just reading a quote where it says, a hero is one who does what has to be done, regardless of the consequences. You know, a hero, one who sees a problem and does what has to be done, regardless of the consequences. And, you know, like you said, he was postulated to that position that he was in. He didn't seek to be an activist. He was just a country principal, you know, who had conviction in his heart. And he was moved to move the people, to inspire the people to fight for freedom, justice, and equality. And he did that. You know, he took several blows, man. You know, his philosophy, that nonviolent philosophy that he adapted from Mahatma Gandhi, you know, he believed in it. He believed in it, you know, for the first half of his career. And he moved out on that belief. You know, he didn't allow himself to be shaken from others who didn't agree with it. You know what I'm saying? And he mobilized and he made a lot of changes due to that attack and that strategy. So he was a great man. You know, a lot of the prejudices and racist policies, you know, he with the organization of the SCLC, they accomplished it. They broke it down out there in Alabama and Selma. So I give a lot of respect to Dr. Martin Luther King, you know, and his speeches. He was a very eloquent man, you know, when he put those words together. So his vision was amazing, you know. So I don't undermine him. I know a lot of times people will say because he was nonviolent, you know, that he was soft or he was stupid, but it still takes heart to go out there on the front line and fight and demand justice, you know. So a lot of people weren't doing that. So for him to do it and have a voice and have people to believe in him and believe in his vision and go out there with him, that says a lot about him. So I think he's a great man.
For sure.
So,
absolutely.
No doubt. So hopping into it, how do you think about, well, what is your ideas of the philosophy he had and how do you think it's relevant to today's time? And what were his philosophy?
Right. So I'm going to tackle the philosophy he had about the two philosophies are about love and nonviolence. And those are separate, even though we try to merge them together all the time. But the nonviolent philosophy, let's deal with that. I think it's relevant today. I think it's relevant, you know what I'm saying? Violence has its place in this planet. But I think nonviolence has its place because at the end of the day, it, we're in a position as black people, let's be real, and poor people throughout the world, where we're at an extreme disadvantage against the power structure when it comes to military, when it comes to military operations, right? So
yeah.
At the end of the day, while I do understand, you know, the philosophy from the militants about guerrilla warfare, truth be told, man, the American military is just, you know, it's on a level where, you know, it's going to be hard. It would be virtually impossible to defeat them using violence. And from a moral perspective, yeah. Dealing with the love aspect, one would have to question if you can actually end violence through violence. You know what I'm saying? That's a question that people have to ask themselves. I don't know if that's plausible. You know what I mean? His love philosophy, you know, it kind of changed. You know what I'm saying? So we got to deal with it, that transition, because initially he thought that you could just love white people into, you know, and not being racist. You know what I mean? He thought that, you know, he believed in their humanity, Trump, and everything. But, you know, like I know, towards the end, he began to understand the complexities of institutional racism, particularly when he began to journey into the North and see that, you know, the Klan wasn't out there hanging people. You know what I'm saying? What was happening with slumlords was making sure that people couldn't, you know, have a decent standard of housing. Just people weren't getting jobs. You know what I'm saying? So he began to see racism on a whole different front. And he began to realize it was ingrained in the American ethos, in the American identity. You know what I'm saying? So I think his philosophy of love is peace, but I think when he began to change and understand that black people had to unite first, establish power base before we could integrate, which is oftentimes not known, because they think he was just this, let's kumbaya, you know, with white folk and just assimilate into white culture. When he wasn't about that, he was about, you know, establishing power and sharing power. I think that's real, and I think that's relevant today, that portion of Dr. King. He acknowledged that when he made the I Have a Dream speech, he was a bit naive. You know, he talked about that later in his life. He thought that he looked back on that and said he was naive, even though they throw that speech out there. That wasn't the king that died. That speech is not reflective of the man who died 5 years later. You know what I mean?
True.
But the flipping and bouncing on that level, you know, I was reading where Coretta and him was decent over finances, because they said he made almost $200,000 a year on speeches. And he gave almost all of it. He only kept about $4,000 a year. And when he won the Nobel Peace Prize, he gave up the entire $54,000 to the movement. And so, I want to ask you that, man. You know, when you hear guys like T.D. Jakes, you hear guys like Creflo Dollar, you know what I'm saying? You hear these guys talking about prosperity gospel, and if you just think yourself out of the situation, ignoring, you know, the social issues, because he also said that, you know, he didn't study Karl Marx, he studied Jesus. he basically said was the ultimate revolutionary. What do you think about that today? Would he get along with them guys, and what would be his relationship to preachers who taught prosperity gospel today? What do you think that would be?
Wow. Man, I think it would be the same way it was when he was walking the planet Earth. You know, even amongst his crew or his organization, he had those detractors and guys who was greedy for money, you know, who was looking at dollar signs and trying to influence him or coerce him to receive more money and do more speeches to help the movement, to help bring money in, and wanted to skim some of that money off the top. But his moral understanding and his moral convictions were so strong, and the way he presented his arguments, I think that compelled them to check themselves. So, and he was so true to himself and so true to, you know, the movement, that you know, halted their greedy interest. And I think it'd be the same way today. You know, I think it'd be pretty much either you're going to roll with me or get out of the way as far as these new prosperity gospels. I don't know. I don't think he would agree at all with what they preach, you know, because he know the Bible. He know what Jesus stood for, you know, what the Bible promotes Jesus stood for. And Jesus wasn't about materialistic things and buying jets and big mansions, 16-room mansions and Bentleys. So I know he would question these things with these preachers. He would sit down. I know he probably would put them under attack, you know, or expose them and ask them, what do they have all these things for when they can be using this to help the plight of the people? You know, so I think he wouldn't agree with it at all, you know. And that marks the difference between a true fighter. We see basically all of the the men who really stood and died for freedom, justice, and equality died in the state of apartheid. You know, Malcolm X, Dr. Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi, all of these guys really gave up that material. And
that's right.
I was just, not to take up too much time, but they say the more that you fight for freedom of justice or liberating the minds, the more you will lose material things, but you will gain more spiritual understanding, you know. The more and more you become spiritual, the more you'll give up on the material thing. These things don't even matter no more because the true wealth that you have is beyond the physical, you know. And you already brought the enriched with your morals and values and principles, you know. And so money really can't even help you, although you would need it to help fuel the movement. And that's what he was using it for. But far as you personally, you are already free, you know. And I think that also sit well with the people. If people seeing you one of them, you relating to them on that level, then they will be more willing to accept you. But if you got big Bentleys and planes and jets, and you know, I think you kind of move you outside. You can't really understand the people, so you're not really on that level. Now they looking at you as something they have to reach, and if you preaching it, then basically you just continuing to feed the beast and still spreading that money value ideology that's helping the system in the first place, you know.
That's right.
No doubt. So we were speaking about how his philosophy started to change. What started bringing about this change in Dr. King's philosophy?
Well, a lot of things. Particularly, like we talked about before, him going to the North. Selma was about the last time where we see King kind of focusing on civil rights. He began to transition more to a human rights, more multi-layered approach to attacking oppression and understanding oppression. Even in that last speech he made in Selma after the march, in Montgomery, when they marched himself in Montgomery, the speech he gave, he began to talk about poverty. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And they start saying, look, you know, this is not just a black thing, a white thing. It's a capitalism thing. You know what I'm saying? And, at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying? And so, you know, we got to begin to understand that, you know, in 1967, you know, at this point, he's been in Chicago. Again, he's beginning to see slumlords. He sees racism from a whole different perspective, from an institutional level. They got hit the head, got hit the head with a rock when they were doing the march, you know what I'm saying, trying to integrate a white suburban community.
Right.
You have to start questioning, you know, well, man, the Klan ain't up here hanging dudes, but what they doing is they getting crazy. They're up here in the North, you know what I'm saying? And so he was rejected by a lot of black pastors up there for his style, for his style of speech, for his style of protest. And he just began to reinvent a lot of his ideology, you know what I'm saying? And 67, he speaks out against Vietnam, you know what I'm saying, in a very, very forceful way. He began to call America out on their imperialism. You know, you spend money on war, but you won't feed the poor. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
He's getting crazy. You know what I'm saying? And so by this point, he's become a pariah. You know, where they loved him, he was endeared. He had made Time Magazine 10 Most Influential Americans for the last 5 or 6 years. They took him out of that little group of people.
Mm.
And
a lot of
black ministers and white ministers begin to take funding away from SCLC. That's why he's poor. You know what I'm saying? And King is noted as saying that, you know, I sleep in the street, man, before I start telling the truth. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's power. I mean, we minimizing that in this damn time. We're telling the truth. A sort of revolutionary suicide. We did a build on that. You know what I'm saying? This brother, man, really put it out there. You know, he was dying before he was assassinated. You know what I'm saying? As far as within the society, because he was already giving up. And this is why, you know, Coretta had to go so hard 15 years to get his holiday because, you know, he had been made a pariah.
He sacrificed
a lot.
Yeah.
That's right. Right. Martin Luther King was killed.
Yeah.
So we're making it like, you know, he was so beloved, you know what I'm saying? The world loved him, you know what I'm saying? I mean, this brother was killed. And the FBI had been following this brother since 1961. So he was being tailed. He was being surveilled. You know what I mean? It's not like, you know, they wasn't aware of the death threats. You know what I'm saying? So they let it happen. Right? They let it happen with Malcolm. We got to always be mindful that our government was right there. They witnessed this.
Right there.
They witnessed this.
Right.
You dig what I'm saying? So it was around, you know, 1995, where he began to be a little bit more open and political about his thought. But I want to go back over to, yeah. to bring the king up to date. You know what I'm saying? Because now we live
right,
in
no
a
doubt.
Mass incarceration. We're living in the Black Lives Matter era. And
yeah.
King went to jail many times. King didn't do a straight bid like Malcolm did. But King, you know, King did many jail stints as he went throughout the South
yeah.
protesting. And he once said, you know, I'd rather be in jail 10 years than serve my people. You know what I'm saying? But what I want to know is, what would King say about mass incarceration? And, you know, what would he instruct us to do? What do you think?
Man, you know, hold up. I think King would do, to answer your question, it's hard to speak on a person who's passed away and what their thoughts would be then they're not here in the physical. Knowing his ideas and what he stood for, I think he would see the gross error in mass incarceration. I think he would tie all that into a segregated system or a racist system that's still targeting young Black men and using young Black men as chattel sheep or slaves all over again to help further produce for this industrial complex. You know, if he was to look at the facts and he see that Black people make up 12% of the prison population, make up 12% of the United States population, but makes up 80% of the prison population, he would see a gross error in this. And I think he would be upset about it. He would be outraged about it. He would see the injustice, especially when you look at the World Almanac, that white people commit more crimes than Blacks as far as the arrest rate go in every category of crime, from rape to robbery to murders to drug possession and drug dealing or distribution to car theft. All of these things, white people outnumber Blacks, but Black people are the only ones who are being incarcerated for these crimes. So you would see the gross error, and then he would, well, from what we know, you know, when there was any gross error as far as race relations went in America, he protested. He moved out. He strategized and he activated. He involved himself in activism to try to bring attention and awareness to this error, you know, or to this flaw. So in the same way that there was a segregation going on, or the same way there was the Jim Crow laws where Black people couldn't go into stores and buy food, or Black people had the worst schools, he protested about it. He let his voice be heard. He organized, and they fought for it. They fought for their freedom, justice, and equality. So in the same way Black people was being locked up by the truckloads and incarcerated and separated from their families, I think he would do the same thing again. He would still fight. He would protest, and he would get the families involved. You know, he would bring awareness or attention to the family members as far as their loved ones being incarcerated, you know. So I think it would be, you know, with any other injustice going on in society that he fought for, being this is a new injustice, you know, he would do the same thing that he did for any other injustice. He would protest it somehow, some way to hurt their pockets. You know, that's what Dr. Martin Luther King understood, you know, that this whole system is set up on economic power. You know what I'm saying, for the majority, for the European man. And so the one way to truly hurt them, you know, hurt their pockets, to boycott, you know, boycott their industries, boycott their businesses. And as I reflect back, I think it happened in Birmingham, Alabama, when they boycotted the bus system, the transit system. The ingenuity and the lack of unity amongst the people as they started carpooling and creating their own means of transportation in order to avoid the bus, it was so positive. They said the energy was so magnetic and loving and upbeat, you know, how they started working with one another. And yet, I think they should have kept on doing that, you know what I'm saying? Because, okay, now we don't realize we don't need y'all buses no more. And once the transit local authority, I forget the name, but once they seen how much money that they was losing, they went ahead and changed the law. And then people was like, okay, we can get back on the bus. We can sit anywhere we want on the bus. But had they kept their own business going, their own unity, their own transportation system. You know, I think, man, how much greater we could be nowadays, you know, still just doing for self. Yeah, you know what I mean? So if he would have seen that vision, I think that would have been a great thing too, you know. But let's get back to nowadays as far as are there people out here who try to manipulate or exploit or use his philosophy to their own personal interests or to their organization's interests? You think?
That's touching on the L joint. I want to spec in that one. and that's real. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, well, I mean, because a lot of people don't know that we really just don't be, you know, rehearsing this. We just keeping it real with the people. But
that's right.
Of course. You know what I'm saying? Conservatives have their version of king. They use the symbol of king to promote the message of individualism. That's why we. Why you think you know that one bar in that speech? I have a dream. The content of their character rather than the color of their skin. You know what I'm saying? That's a promotion.
They use that one.
Then you got liberals who try to utilize, and progressive liberals who try to utilize king to promote the social agenda that they have, the Fox agenda, as Brother Malcolm called it, as that they have. And then you have the radicals, you know what I'm saying, who point to the fact that, you know, toward the end, you know what I'm saying, he actually was like, let's slow down on this integration thing publicly, you know what I'm saying? If we're not going to be able to have no power when we come to the table, we ain't just trying to assimilate into whiteness, you know what I'm saying? So, of course, you know what I'm saying? I think what gets lost in that, man, is that, you know, we don't deal with him on a real level, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, King had his flaws. He wasn't perfect, you know what I'm saying? He was an adulterer, you know what I'm saying? He was well known. He was a plagiarist. He used other people's writings and put it in his writings, whether it was his speeches, even his thesis when he got his doctorate is questionable. We know that he was a little bit sexist. Ella Baker spoke about that, you know what I'm saying, when she was going throughout the South organizing why she left the SCLC and joined SNCC, because she felt like, you know, Martin Luther King was one of the most sexist men she knew, you know what I'm saying? I mean, we're not going to pretend like the dude was a saint, you know what I'm saying? He was a human being,
right.
You know what I'm saying? He was a human being, and he's still a hero. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we learn from his flaws, and we learn from his progresses and his successes. You know what I'm saying? King was a man like me and you, who was working to be better, to be perfect. But he was compassionate, and with his issues, you know what I'm saying? He was real.
Right.
He knew he had depression. He was stuck with the psychological issues. You know what I'm saying? And so, I mean, what black man ain't, black woman ain't, you know what I'm saying, in racist ass America. Excuse my French. I mean, how can we not have issues? We've been drugged since 1619. You dig what I'm saying?
Oh, chum. We got a 90-second hit. We got a 90-second hit.
So, you know, we black lines matter. We've been trying to tell these people that's the 1619. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean,
no, we got
know, a, how can you
we got a 90-second hit, brother.
The symbol of King has been exploited by the oppressive group, the dominant culture, and I'm not painting with a broad brush. I'm talking about those who control the power structure, those who control the institutions, because we know that when we say white man, we're not talking about people who are from our European descent, because white is, and I want to say this, qualified as white is a scripture that was designed specifically to be opposed to black, but that's a whole other show. Because Europeans weren't calling themselves white when they were in Europe, right? They were Saxon,
that's right.
They were Germani, they were Celtic. They got white when they came over here and needed to separate themselves from blackness. That's another issue. What I'm saying is, King, in his true form, without being utilized for somebody else's benefit, is still a hero, man. Still a great man.
No doubt.
Still a passionate
no
man.
Doubt.
Still is
no
a
doubt.
Man that I honor and respect. For the sacrifice he made for me and for all my people. And I love him. You know what I'm saying? And he was a work in progress right now with the rest of us. You know what I'm saying? I think I want to tackle with you. Let me see. So I was looking recently at.
We got a 10-second hit.
Okay, well, I'm going to roll up.